Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast. This is a show about data networking. If you are all about TCP/IP and data centers and routers and switches and firewalls and packets and 40 gig Ethernet and, well, goodness, you've come to the right place. We are those kind of folks that talk about those sorts of things. We're engineers, and we like to think of this show as audio-defined networking. So, moving right into the show today, I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter, and you can follow me at my blog, ethancbanks.com. And for the show, packetpushers.net is our hub of activity where we have a community blog and all of our audio, including this show, can be found there. With me is co-host Mr. Greg Farrell. And Greg, how many days is it until your bandwidth upgrade?
Oh, it's 9 days. 9 days until, you know, and, you know, they're promising me that they're going to give me some 16 megs of bandwidth, but count me dubious. I don't believe that it's really true.
16 meg of bandwidth?
Yeah.
At your house?
Well, I live
ask how much you have now?
I have 1 meg down. 256k up. I live in bandwidth poverty. Please, sir, can you spare some bandwidth? Please, sir. I live at the very wrong end of a copper line in a piece of countryside that the internet forgot.
Man, that is, I mean, a meg, that is sad. I feel, I mean, America is criticized for how lousy its broadband infrastructure is, and yet at my house, I've got, I think, 35 meg down and 2 meg up or something like that on on one of these premium services. You know, 1 meg down and 256 up. I mean, that's modem territory almost in this age. It's really kind of sad.
I live in a part of the countryside which is very sparse, and the local exchanges aren't. Let's just say the people that live around me are not technologically minded, shall we say. I think that actually having a mobile phone would be a stretch for them. Most of them probably still using their landlines.
Yeah, you're in a rural area, and that's just the way it is. It's not dense with population, nor are the demands of the folks very big, and so why build the infrastructure?
The guy down the bottom of the hill who's actually just a couple of miles closer to the exchange can get 25 meg or 30 meg down. It's just at the top of the hill, the cable between here and the bottom of the hill is not good. And last time I asked, the guy said, sure. He said, we can give you the bandwidth upgrade. I'll send you a quote. And he wanted $45,000. I said, are you going to make me pay for the entire run from the exchange? He said, yeah. He said, that's the way it works. The first person who wants the bandwidth pays for all the cabling. And if nobody wants it.
In a residential setting? I can't believe in a residential setting he even gave you the quote. I mean, that's comedy.
Yeah, it was. It was like, it was pretty grim, let's say that, yes.
Well, the show today, we are going to talk about eVPN. It's a new style of VPN technology, and we've got a couple of guests with us to discuss eVPN. First up is a somewhat frequent contributor to the Packet Pushers community, Mr. Russ White. Russ, would you say hello, introduce yourself to folks, and give us just tell us a little bit of what you've been doing lately.
So I'm supposed to make excuses about why I'm not writing as often as I should now, Greg, or Jeff? Ethan?
Actually, I'm Ethan, yeah. Third time's the charm. There you go.
Well, I have you all three up on my screen. You know, what can I say?
Commercial sites, haven't you? You've been, somebody better looking came along and said, come write for us, come write for us.
Well, she is cuter than you are, Greg, no matter what you might think.
Everybody's cuter than you.
Let's see. I am at Ericsson, principal engineer there. And let's see, what is it? I was called most recently a free radical. That was my title that was given to me by my manager most recently. So that pretty much describes what I do. I've been working on data center architecture stuff and some new boxes, which are exciting and fun. And I've been working, believe it or not, I'm going to Greenland to work on their network.
Greenland has a network.
Greg, you thought your download speeds were bad?
I just want to pick up on the concept of free radical. If you're doing it for free...
No.
We need to have a chat.
I didn't say I wasn't getting paid to be a free radical. I'm just being a free radical. But yeah, I'm going to Greenland. End of the month to help them work on their network a little bit, and they promised me a helicopter flight across the ice pack. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing yet.
Wow.
It's a good thing as long as you don't land unexpectedly.
You know, get some good pictures and blog that up, because that would be a fascinating read, you know, what networking is like in the far-flung corners of the globe, because you're about to go to one. Wow.
And we, but Greg lives there, so.
Just about. Well, also joining us today is Jeff Tansura. And Jeff, same thing. Would you please introduce yourself and give folks a bit about your background, what you've been up to lately?
Hi, I'm Jeff Tansura. I'm with Ericsson. Got long title, Head of Technology Strategy Routing. In short, I'm responsible for whatever we do in routing space. Besides Ericsson, I'm chairing routing working group in ATF. I'm very excited about EVP and done a lot of work. Quite some work, especially in glue areas, when you can use EVPN as glue between different technologies. And this is specifically area where I'm very excited about EVPN. So I'm in product line IP routers and working on routing software, routing boxes, whatever routing company does.
Very good. Thank you very much for joining us. And I know you said before the show that you're feeling a little bit under the weather, so I appreciate your willingness to still go ahead and record with us. Very much appreciated. So,
Jeff, can you glue Ethan's network together?
Absolutely.
Not Ethan, I'm sorry. Greg! Oh, I've lost it today.
Well, let's get into the conversation here and introduce this topic. First of all, Jeff, why don't you take this question? What is EVPN? What is it? Introduce this topic to our listeners.
If we take a step back and look into history, VPN has been there for a very long time. However, we had two quite non-interoperable flavors of VPLS, so 4761, 4762. We had auto-discovery on top of 4762 and all the wars between Cisco, Juniper, and such. On another side, we had point-to-point technology and all different flavors of pseudo-wires, multi-segment pseudo-wires, and all kinds of stuff in between, including BGP auto-discovery. So all the stuff didn't quite work together. However, this didn't push us to introduce new technology. Data center problems did. So EVPN was really not invented. It's just a bunch of features which make sense on top of what we could do with VPLS. Data center requirement pushed us to do what we call today EVPN. Ability to do active-active, ability to snoop into control plane, ability to glue different technologies. This is the core of EVPN. And this is technology which is supposed to work for everybody, deliver unified services, and deliver to end user, service provider, simplified way, rich services, and pretty much nirvana of layer 2 networking.
Now, I want to pick up on a couple of things you said there, because you mentioned VPLS, and you mentioned a few other somewhat related service provider technologies that are used to connect disparate networks across a provider's backbone. So are you saying that EVPN is positioned to replace or augment those other technologies that you were mentioning?
From my point of view, absolutely replace. It's simplification. However, what it brings in is ability to introduce BGP policies. So suddenly, or MEF services, complex services, especially if you look at E3, it took us probably 10 years to talk about it, another 5 years to try to standardize it. We are still nowhere. Just by using import network policies in BGP, you can create any overlay topology on top of your underlay, which is great, really.
So maybe we should describe actually how EVPN works real fast.
Yeah, that would be good, Russ. Go ahead.
So essentially what EVPN does is you take BGP and you put layer 2 addresses in it, and you advertise them as if they were layer 3 destinations with an MPLS rewrite or an MPLS tag as the rewrite header or as the next hop, so that you can actually route layer 2 through BGP, essentially, to get to the bare bones, most minimal version of what the thing is.
And so by layer 2 addresses, you're talking about advertising an Ethernet MAC address?
Yes, that's correct. Yep.
And therefore, Ethernet VPN.
Yes, Ethernet VPN. So basically what you're doing is you're advertising in BGP an Ethernet destination address. It's just a different AF, like you might have IPv4, IPv6, but you now have Ethernet, and your next hop is an MPLS tunnel or an MPLS label that you would impose or onto the stack that would get you to that particular Ethernet address. So it's L3 VPNs, but it's for Ethernet.
So listening to that, you're saying, instead of saying, oh, I've got a MAC address, then encapsulating it in an IP frame, then banging an MPLS header on the front, and then cracking that across an MPLS backbone, You're just saying, oh, I've got a MAC address, snap an MPLS tag into it and send that across the backbone.
Correct, Jeff? Is that the way you would describe it as well?
It's even more cluttered to layer 3 VPN. In order to provide uniqueness across MAC addresses, which in theory is supposed to be unique practice, they're not. There are many vendors who abuse someone else's MAC space. You could use entities so known as RD, route descriptor, which makes any entry unique. So you prepend your MAC address with RD and make it unique, even if you receive same MAC address across different layer 2 segments.
Right. It's L3 VPN, but you can actually have overlapping address space just like you can with an L3 VPN. But exactly. This is for layer 2.
Yes.
Yeah. But this sounds to me like this is the simplest possible way to implement an Ethernet extension over an MPLS network.
And the cool thing is, like Jeff was saying, you get RD, you get RT. You can do all of your separation within your data center or among your customers using RDRT type stuff, which gives you exactly all the same stuff that you would have as far as multi-tenancy. You get all the policies of BGP, so you get local pref and communities and all of that stuff that you can set up filters on and play with. And
so you can control the Ethernet flooding, you control the MAC addresses using RDs, RTs, and prefs and all that sort of stuff is what you're saying. It's not like normally when we have MAC addresses in the network, we just flood them and they flood immediately, universally, everywhere. The fact that you've got the BGP protocol controlling the propagation gives you options for controlling the propagation of MAC address prefixes according to some criteria that you within the limits of the protocol itself.
Yep. It's really, really simple. It's really, really cool. And, you know, you get essentially, like I said, you get all the BGP stuff, but it's for Ethernet.
How many Ethernet MACs need to be known on either side? You don't need two data centers to know a complete set of each other's MAC addresses necessarily, or do you? I mean, it seems like this thing would run into scale limitations pretty quickly at larger sites if the global MAC table at each site needed to be known by the service provider.
Well, let's back up though. Now you're treading on the space of what does BGP scalability look like, right? And BGP today in the global internet core runs 1 million routes, and it does so pretty easily. You know, you look at AT&T or Verizon's network and you start looking at their L3 VPN networks and what they're managing and adding 350,000 routes or so from the global core, 400,000, whatever it is now. I think it just broke 400,000 a couple of weeks ago. And you know, like Ericsson, we've tested our BGP, and we're well over 1 million routes easily without breaking a sweat.
Yeah,
so,
but if I'm a service provider and I put, you know, a whole lot of customers onto my infrastructure, you know, a whole bunch of different eVPN segments, if you will, then does every MAC from every site need to be known to every other site, or is there some kind of a ingress and egress point MAC that needs to be known that other MACs are hiding behind?
So there are multiple ways to provide optimization. Starting from high level, from BGP level, you could use RT constraints not to flood to everybody, but only to those who are interested. If you look at more encapsulation, some vendors did flavor PBB EVPN, meaning only BMAC addresses are flooded. So depending on scale, PBB might be right technology. If scale is not so high, I think it brings additional complexity. But again, there's a way to reduce number of MAC addresses known in the core. Another point, pretty much every vendor I've known of implementing EVPN to decouple what's known in line card versus what's known in BGP. What you could do really is not to download stuff which is in your BGP, which, again, in our implementation, you could go to the up to 100 million routes. What you could do is to keep it in BGP, however, download only active flows. So when flow of this particular destination MAC address hits you, you look in BGP, you download this information. However, if it's not such flow, you still keep BGP in BGP, local MAC addresses in local, and you reduce probably amount of MACs in your line card by 90%.
Right. Remember, you have RD and RT, right? So you have the ability to localize particular things into VLANs or into segments as well as geographically through the network.
And that makes sense. And actually, this little comment is a good segue into another question here. You mentioned provider backbone bridging earlier, PBB. Well, there's other technologies that are kind of similar to what you're describing, but are different. You've got Ethernet over MPLS, there's VPLS, particularly VPLS, which I think a lot of folks might be consumers of that are listening to this show. How would EVPN be different from how VPLS works?
So when we are talking about VPLS, there are two different flavors. As known as Campella versus Martini. in all good days. If you compare it to Martini, so RFC4762, there are no pseudo wires, which is really great improvement. Not all the information is loaded. Again, there's separation between control and forwarding plane, which is kind of buzzword in today's DN world, but this is what we want. Number three, there is auto-discovery. There is very efficient multicast replication for broadcast and non-unique. So whatever property of VPLS you take, irrespectively whether it's Campella or Martini, improvements have been brought to almost every area. So whatever you do, you are better off. If you look at point-to-point services, it's just a matter of definition of your policies. So over your EVP and WOC, you can do LAN services, you can do point-to-point services, you can do E3S services just by configuring BGP differently.
And that is really one of the big advantages here of EVPN, is the ability to use BGP for policy and just increase flexibility in how you're delivering the service.
Absolutely.
So let's get into some of the other advantages of EVPN. We've talked a bit about how it works, the use of BGP, how it's going to scale. What are some other reasons that providers are going to be interested in EVPN? And then I'll put another question on it. There's service providers who want to use EVPN for whatever their reasons might be, but what about end users? Am I, as say an enterprise network, going to want to go to my service provider someday and say, can you deliver me EVPN instead of, you know, layer 3 VPN or VPLS perhaps?
Okay, so from a provider's perspective, it depends. Okay, so let's talk about two different use cases specifically. Okay. The first use case is, of course, there's actually more than that, so let's just start with two. Anyway, let's start with the idea that you want to provide a layer 2 service to your customers. Well, why would you choose EVPN over VPLS? Well, there's a lot of reasons, actually. Number one, it's more efficient on your BGP tables. You're actually able to control your information more completely, and the distribution of the MAC addresses everywhere in your network and to your edges. So if you're providing an L2 VPN to a large number of sites or whatever, you can actually have a lot more control over where the MAC addresses are going and things like that, and where the state's being pushed into your network. Another point of view is that it's actually much simpler. This is a much, much simpler solution than VPLS from the provider's perspective. It's just basically at my edge, I just pick up the Ethernet packet, I look at the destination MAC address, I shove an MPLS label on top of it. Maybe I shove two MPLS labels on top of it because I'm, you know, doing tunnels and tunnels or whatever. I'm imposing two labels at my edge, and I pack it into the right MPLS tunnel, and off it goes. You know, I have all my ability to mark things in MPLS and manage the traffic. And to my core, it looks just like unicast IP traffic in a standard L3 VPN that I'm already providing my customers. So it's more similar to an L3 VPN from the provider's perspective than VPLS, which actually makes it easier to think about. You know, you're looking at this network and you think, okay, I've got L2 VPNs, and I have L3 VPNs, and they are built on totally different technologies, and I've got to manage them and troubleshoot them and think about them completely separate. If I'm using EVPN, that goes away, right? It's the same thing. It's just a different AF in essence, and so all the controls and everything I have are the same.
For the last decade or so, we've always had this paranoia about Ethernet and propagating too many, like because we can't control MAC addresses, there's too many MAC addresses, we can't propagate MAC addresses between two data centers. We can't route by MAC address has been the paradigm, right? And there's two reasons for that. One, we've never had enough memory that I know of. And the other reason that I know of is that we can't be able to prevent loops. So I guess you're going to talk about loops in a minute. But are we saying that we can now do this, you know, use a routing protocol to distribute MAC addresses between any number of sites because we're now able to scale up the devices and the software and the routing protocols? Is that what's different to what where we were 5 years ago, say?
So I think you are talking about technology evolution, not so much what has changed since then. Yes, but not only that. I mean, if you would have had this technology 5 years ago, we could have used it 5 years ago. It just didn't exist.
Yep.
Obviously, today routers, they've got much more powerful CPUs and more memory. But thanks to some properties of EVPN, and I would like to talk about one very specific one. What we have now is ability to advertise a default gateway extended community together with either route or MAC address. So if you look at business side of VPLS, usually people were charged per MAC address sent. And there is no such thing as default MAC address in Ethernet. So you need to advertise all MAC addresses. In EVPN, on contrary, what you could do, you could advertise single MAC address, attach default gateway send community to it, and receive node would know in advance, this is the node I need to send all the traffic I've received. So that's it. So it's much more efficient in terms of use of resources, not only ability to use more advanced compute and storage functionality in the routers.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the eVPN might have a routing information base that contains every MAC address which exists in memory, but that it might not necessarily load everything into the forwarding information base until it's actually needed.
This is one of the properties. I was talking specifically about using of default gateway and Ethernet, which is absolutely, didn't exist before eVPN.
Right, so that you're addressing the redundancy issue there? Is that what I'm saying, what I'm hearing?
You reduce number of MAC addresses you need to send. I mean, if you look at IP routing, if you've got default route, there is nothing else you need. You just send all the traffic to default route.
You're saying is in the local network, you've got all the MAC addresses inside of your local broadcast domain, your layer 2 broadcast domain, and you just see everything, every other MAC address just gets sent to the default gateway MAC address because it knows where to get to. So you're using the MAC address of the default gateway as like a MAC next hop or default gateway kind of concept.
Yes, at layer 2, correct.
At layer 2, yeah. So everything's hidden behind that address. So when we look at technologies from the vendors like OTV or HP's eVPN, they have these L2 extension technologies which do broadcast suppression, loop prevention, MAC localization. How do you handle those in the eVPN technology?
Again, it's my personal opinion, but eVPN can pretty much replace any of local technologies. It could work together, but nothing really requires you to introduce any of those protocols if you use eVPN end-to-end. If you're in data center, probably Tor or even hypervisor would make Tor. So loop prevention, there are mechanisms in BGP and additional communities which make sure traffic is not looped. In case of multi-homing, there is DF election, meaning that only DF stands for designated forwarder, will forward bump traffic towards Ethernet segment. So again, no replication.
Right.
Fast reroute technology, absolutely same fast reroute as we did in L3VPN. You've got MAC address known through two different next hops. So you're supposed to use probably at pass or pass diverse or any other BGP technology to provide you additional next hops. You instantiate both primary and backup and forwarding, you could reroute in sub 50 milliseconds.
So 50 milliseconds to reconverge around a network failure or an outage condition.
With any number of MAC addresses, very importantly.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, you use DF or you use distinguished forwarders to make sure that you're not replicating traffic onto the L3VPN or L2VPN, right?
That's like OTV, actually, yeah.
Right, like OTV, but you know, it's all straight BGP, which is really, really nice. Mm-hmm. You're not actually trying to build adjacencies across the provider network in order to exchange the MAC address information. It's just another AF like an L3VPN is. So that's very, very straightforward from the provider and from the customer's perspective. You know, so it's a simpler technology from all those perspectives.
How different is it from shortest path bridging? I just hear a lot of similarities. I mean, SPB has got an NCAP and, you know, and all that. And I'm,
okay.
You know, we kind of have an NCAP here with MPLS with tagging put on it. It's a different mechanism.
Right.
And there's a different forwarding architecture. I get that. But there are some similarities too.
Yeah, but sure, but you're looking at a different control plane, actually, right?
Yeah.
Shortest path bridging is essentially shortest path that is being used to build a tree in the network by blocking links, just like traditional bridging does, right? Whereas this, you're actually using a routing protocol. It's more, I even hesitate to say this because Jeff is going to reach through the Skype and smack me upside the head.
Do it, Jeff.
Okay, I'll just
It's more like Trill than it is SPB, okay? But the difference is that Trill is based on ISIS. It's designed for a very specific set of environments, which are, for instance, Trill has this thing about being able to take R bridges and bridges and throw them randomly into the network, and it just works. EVPN is not there. That's not what EVPN is about, right?
But the advantage of ISIS is that it's self-configuring, self-adapting, autonomous configuration. It self-configures itself. You add in another switch, you tell it to join the R bridge group, and then it starts configuring itself from the available information. It doesn't need somebody on the CL. Yeah. Whereas if you're doing BGP, then there's a lot more manual configuration from some operator who has to get it up and working. It's not going to happen on its own.
Right, exactly. But the advantage to BGP side is it's much more scalable. You have route reflectors, you have all the policy, you know, all of that stuff goes with it. So
well, that's an interesting idea, route reflector, because if you had a route reflector that was propagating MAC addresses, and that route reflector was integrated with, say, the OpenStack platform, right? And every time you registered, kicked up another VM, if it announced that MAC address into the route reflector with various metadata. So if you said, for example, I'm spawning a new VM, this VM is going to be given this MAC address belongs to this security group because OpenStack spawned it, then I can announce that MAC address into the route reflector saying it has these properties, it belongs in this VRF, and propagate that. Is that the sort of thing that we could do here?
Oh, yes.
Step back into SPB space. So SPB is great technology as such. I mean, I spent quite some time, probably a year of my life working on it, filed some patents on FastRoute for SPB, some other stuff. But if you take a look, it makes sense to run SPB within data center. It doesn't make sense, and you don't want to run SPB between data centers. It's like running ISIS over different service providers network. Doesn't scale, doesn't work. However, given that SPB in data center works well, EVPN between data center work as well. What we did, we pushed a solution, or actually there's a draft I'm authoring called SPBM over EVPN, explains exactly how you map SPBM locally in data center into EVPN between data center. So you take best of both worlds, combines us, and it works very well.
So really two SPB domains bridged together with EVPN?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, even beyond that, the second use case I see for EVPN is strictly to use EVPN in your data center, right? Because if you look at like the Microsoft model where they're using BGP and they're doing route reflectors anyway, if you have that sort of a model, then this actually does work with the orchestration layers of OpenStack, or could, I shouldn't say does right now, but could work with all the orchestration layers that you would look at, like OpenStack, and you could actually get a lot of information out of your BGP table. There's a lot of network management products and Yang models and stuff around being able to interact with BGP and all of its policies. And then
that makes
if you
sense.
Look at, you know, then if you
and
go
the
look
root
in,
reflector, the root reflector, I'm beginning to think of root reflectors more and more as BGP, as an SDN controller for BGP. Because you can really actually inject information into a root reflector and then off it goes into BGP and does its thing. And it's the BGP is like an automation protocol. It's like a scripting protocol that goes and propagates data out to the devices. But the root reflector is kind of like a controller that's one point to access all of the BGP tables in all of the devices everywhere.
Absolutely. And it also makes sure data is synchronized across different controllers, which is an extremely complex thing in general.
Yeah, well, BGP is a great clustering protocol in that sense.
It's a kitchen sink. That's why we are abusing BGP less. I can tell you.
I love the word abusing BGP.
We publish new drafts on BGP less extensions every 4 weeks. There's more and more stuff on top of it.
Just want to take a break here, Ethan, and I wanted to plug a couple of things, if that's all right with you.
Well, it's your show too, my friend. Plug away.
I wanted to plug a couple of things because there's a whole bunch of things that Packet Pushers does that our listeners may not be aware of. We have two email lists where you can subscribe to. One is the Packet Pushers supporters. There's about 1,200 people on that mail list, and we ask you to come along and sign up. And if we ever get an opportunity to do some, to send a newsletter out when Ethan and I write one, which is usually about twice a year, or if we have an event coming up that we're going to go to where we're being sponsored and we want to promote that event, it would be really helpful if you and the audience could go and head over to the Packet Pushers website, look for the supporters subscription and sign up to that emailing list. We also have another one, which is the Packet Pushers Weekly, and that's where you can actually go and sign up to an email list. Every time we publish a blog post, it gets added, and then on Sunday we send you an email to say, here's all the list of everything that we sent out on Packet Pushers for this week. So we'd love it if you could go over and sign up for those email lists because it helps us to build sponsorship and engagement with vendors, which helps to fund us to continue running the show.
And funding is a helpful thing. We do appreciate that.
That's right.
Money.
Yeah. Well, the good news is, as far as the money stuff goes, is that the way this show has been working out for us, Greg and I see a future where we can do it full time, and we know the listeners have heard that from us before. And so, you know, the more that we can do in that realm and maybe do packet pushers and related things full time, that would be great. Another way that people can help us with that is iTunes. Go up to iTunes and rate the show. Tell people what you think about it. As we continue to build up those reviews, it does help with that. And with making the show a full-time thing for us. But moving on from that, back to EVPN, we've talked a bunch about the nuts and bolts, how the thing works. Let's get into some about some use cases for the end customer. If I'm a user of EVPN, say data center interconnect, that seems to be a viable thing. So let's talk about that first of all, and then maybe talk about some other use cases.
So the data center interconnect is essentially, it depends on whether I guess you're running your own L3 VPN core today, some large companies do, or whether you're buying it from a provider, right? So if you're buying it from a provider, you would just go to your provider and say, I want a layer 2 connection that's EVPN. And they would set it up in their MPLS network, and you would push your MAC addresses. You would make some decisions about communities. You may want to run BGP on your edge so that you can inject some communities into it, like Jeff was talking about the default MAC address, which is a really, really cool idea. So if you have, for instance, a secondary data center and a primary, you might want to shove a secondary data center just a default MAC address, right? And so you would set those communities up, and off you run, and off it goes.
The implication there, though, is that you as an end user are engaging with your service provider on that EVPN service, whereas most services that end users get are actually turnkey. It's an IP address. You assign this IP address to the circuit, and off you go. Right. In this case, you're talking about actually setting up a BGP relationship, defining particular communities, and then working with your provider to advertise particular kinds of MAC addresses and so on into their space.
Right. Well, it depends on the size of the company and the service provider, right? So, I mean, some service providers will work with you on an L3 VPN in the same way. You can advertise EIGRP routes with certain communities, or OSPF routes with certain communities, or whatever you want to, and they'll work with you on that PECE edge to get to the point where you're actually getting what you need out of that L3 VPN. So it's not going to be any different in the L2 world with an EVPN connection.
In other words, you can still nail up just like any layer 2 service, if you want to nail up a mesh of EIGRP relationships through the EVPN that's provided by the service provider, you can do that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure. But I mean, there are actually older technologies out there. I don't know how many service providers support them anymore, but where you could actually transit EIGRP internals over a service provider L3 VPN by including your metrics and et cetera in communities. So in those cases, the service providers would have interacted with you not at BGP, but at EIGRP. Well, in the same way, in an L3 VPN world, you could talk to your provider and say, yeah, we want an EVPN circuit. But what we want to do is we want to manage the BGP endpoint to the degree of being able to manage the communities that are shipped across this, so that at the other end we can see those communities and make decisions based on them. Because it's BGP and the provider isn't really carrying anything more or less than they are today, it's actually much easier to do that than it is with something like VPLS. It just gives you a little more leverage into the circuit itself in that case.
Mm. And so it gives more power to the end user in terms of automatization. I think it's a question of time, maybe. We are talking about within a year, biggest EVPN providers are going to provide list of communities back to their customers saying, if you set this in this community, we are going to route your layer 2 traffic in particular way. So by doing so, you don't need to talk to your service provider which time and money. You can reroute your network based on your internal business logic, which doesn't necessarily overlap with your service provider's business logic. So it gives ability you to run, again, if we talk about buzzwords such as SDN, you can overlay your business logic over service provider's network without interacting with service provider as such.
And so that could map into things like, say, a QoS policy or a particular kind of security policy where you need a traffic forwarded either. Well, so are we talking about NFV there when we get into security policy kind of things? Or
let me rephrase your question. Let's talk about service sharing in this case. So your service provider might just provide multipoint connectivity. Service sharing will take subset of this multipoint connectivity and chain the services. So by using BGP control plane, which is, again, pretty much, you mention community, you reset next hop, you can build your all service chains over service provider's network without talking to service provider.
Yeah, okay, that is what I was getting at. with my badly phrased question. Thank you. That right. is okay. I mean, there's upfront work to do to make that happen. You need to spend time with the service provider, get the communities defined, and you said it may be a matter of time. The service providers are going to tell you how to do that, but the power is there, which is kind of astonishing that you can do that much. There's that much flexibility built in for the enterprise that's consuming this service,
right.
in some cases without having to interact with the service provider once you've got things right. in place.
If you imagine machine-to-machine interface between business logic with an enterprise and a BGP gateway router, again, it looks like future, but you can do this today with the VPN. It's extremely cool.
And so you can even go farther. Let's say that just extend the use case. Let's say that I'm an enterprise that is built to my own new data center, and I've decided to use EVPN for my data center fabric, for my Ethernet fabric, right? So I'm running BGP route reflectors, I'm running Spine and Leaf or whatever I'm running, and wherever my route reflector lives in that network, whether it's on a border leaf or in a VM someplace or in the spine or wherever it happens to be, doesn't matter. I'm running a BGP route reflector that's actually running, so I'm running IP, BGP, and then I'm running MPLS, and then I'm running EVPN on top of that as my Ethernet interface to get rack to rack or VM to VM. What's really cool is when you start talking about the service chaining case, all of a sudden, my remote data center, if it's over an EVPN link between my data centers, looks the same as a local connection in the data center. So all the service chaining and everything just becomes a matter of imposing the right label stack at the top of rack or in the VM or in the hypervisor switch at the first data center, and everything just looks like it's one thing. I'm not actually, the more intelligence I put into the MPLS control plane, the more I can get out of actually controlling my traffic flows and moving VMs and stuff.
So what's interesting to me, listen to you guys describe this, there's a pair of cornerstone technologies that EVPN is relying on, BGP and MPLS. That's fair to say. Now, as I reflect on a lot of the SDN technologies that are in the industry, that is not in the middle of most of the conversations. Certainly not MPLS, although there are certainly SDN providers that have done work in the MPLS space. And again, not really BGP. BGP is not being extended or abused, if you will, to carry additional information that it was perhaps not originally conceived to move around. There's a lot of other proprietary and interesting ways that that SDN is being achieved. OpenFlow certainly being a notable one. Do BGP and MPLS represent the long-term future for SDN, or is it going to be a niche play? And I don't want to get too far afield from EVPN here, but I think there's an important question to be asked here. You know, is that the long-term future? Is BGP and MPLS for SDN, or is it the niche play that the service providers are going to go to because those are the technologies that they know and are familiar with?
I don't think OpenFlow and EVPN are actually mutually exclusive necessarily. Like when you start talking about a route reflector and connecting it with OpenStack, let's say for a moment that I have some top of rack switch sitting in a data center or a hypervisor switch that doesn't know how to talk BGP. Well, that's okay. I can actually talk to that using OpenFlow, and all I'm doing instead of setting next hops or setting up flow labels is I'm actually using the MPLS service chain or the MPLS imposing MPLS labels as my flow label, even from an open flow perspective. So now I'm just talking about different northbound and southbound interfaces, depending on the device that I'm talking to at that moment. So that I'm not sure that I consider them exclusive.
And if you could take an example of the way OpenDLight is built, the southbound plugins are completely decoupled from service and control plane. So if you prefer to use OpenFlow to provision your forwarding elements, you could just take your Yank model and instantiate it as a bunch of labels provisioned through OpenFlow. If you want to use PSEP, same there. If you want to use CLI or TL1, God forbid, you can still do it.
Yeah, you're talking about the modular nature of the OpenFlow controller, the fact that whatever you want to do southbound, if there's it's a pluggable architecture and you can hook it up to talk whatever works best for you in that direction.
Yes.
Right, yeah. Right.
Going back to your question, rather, I'm routing guy, so I might be not so objective. I believe that MPLS is great technology. It works. It's supported by pretty much any L-chip or silicon today. Even if you start with very simple Broadcom, they can do MPLS, at least switching at line rate. So there's no reason to replace it. And it did what it was supposed to do, to decouple location from addressing. BGP on the other side, I mean, there are no other protocol which can scale to the degree of BGP. There is no other protocol we know today which is as strong.
Oh, hang on. You can't say that. You can't say that there are no other protocols that could do this, because there are other protocols, but there's none that we could practically deploy. I personally think BGP is a pile of rubbish, and we could do a lot better if we tried, but there's no way we're going to deploy it because it's out there.
I'm being practical. I'm not being...
Yeah, I'm just saying, don't make claims like BGP is the best that humanity could create, because it clearly is not.
Jeff, you're taking the pragmatic approach, not the religious approach.
Yes.
Yeah, I just, you know, there are people listening to this show, if you say BGP is the best protocol ever, they'll go away with the idea that BGP is the best that humanity can create. It's the least that humanity could create. It's the worst protocol that we could create that everybody would implement, right? Because it had to be dumb enough for every vendor to implement it, because nobody wants to invent advanced features. It's so bad we invented MPLS to make BGP better, right? And then we made it. I mean, seriously, when you look at it in a practical terms, that's where we're at, right? Tell me I'm wrong.
You're lucky Jakob Rechter cannot get you.
Or Tony.
But I agree with you. BGP is proven and it works and we use it, right? And that's fine. But, you know, let's not make the mistake that BGP is the best that we can do.
There needs to be a history of networking by Greg Farrell, kind of your own unique perspective on the protocols and their value and where they came from. That I would read that and read that and read that.
except it would get boring after he said, nothing is ever good.
you say that, but you know the OpenFlow book that I've been talking about for far too long? The whole front, I'm actually thinking about breaking the OpenFlow book into two parts, because the whole front part is what's wrong with routing and what's wrong with networking. And I might actually just publish that as a book in Greg's view of networking is all rubbish, you know, or something. What's wrong with networking by me, you know?
But be careful, Greg, because there is a complexity issue here that you're dealing with, you know, that, yeah, we can invent something better, but in reality, we're gonna run head into Turing at some point. And no, you really can't do better.
Well, no, I mean, you could have an interesting discussion around that, right? But the point is that something that wasn't possible 5 years ago, this EVPN protocol, is now possible today, right? Yeah, now, BGP has served us well for nigh on 20 years, but it's only a matter of time until technology means that BGP is not useful to us or could be replaced with something that is clearly better. And okay, we already replaced EGP with BGP, why not? Is there not CGP, you know?
Okay, but think about this though, Greg. There is an alternative to that scenario, which is the Ethernet alternative, right? Okay. Mm. Is Ethernet anything like what Mr. Metcalf actually originally drew?
No, but that doesn't make it right. We need to go back to Fiddy.
I'm just saying, right? We've invented all this other stuff, but we're still stuck on Ethernet, right? But yet, even though we call it Ethernet, it's not anything like what we had 20 years ago. I see BGP as more of that. Yeah, we invented MPLS, and we've revolutionized BGP. We invented address families. You know, so BGP is not what Tony and Yakov drew on the napkin, and you can still go to Cisco Building 24 and see a photocopy of the napkin, you know? It's just not. Or you can see a copy of it in the front of my BGP book, which is, what, 20 years old by now or whatever. Mm-hmm. But whatever it is, you know, so I'm okay with that. I'm okay that we take BGP and we re-engineer it to the point that 20 years from now, people look at it and go, well, you still call this BGP? What?
Yeah.
That's not the same thing at all.
Yeah. Just so long as I think the thing is to recognize that we're always working within the limits of what we can do, not of the limits of what we could do. I think it's important to remember that networking is always constrained by what is possible, right? We always do things at the edge of the network because that's the only place we can do things.
Right.
We always do something with BGP because that's the only thing that we can do, right?
Yeah, that's the 1/R chart, you know. There you go. Yep. That's it. So,
So speaking of things that are wrong with networking and what we can do versus what we could do, how far along in the IETF process has EVPN gotten?
Ethan's heroic attempt to get us back on target.
Hey, I've been thinking about that segue for 3 minutes.
Sorry, I'll get off my luck dragon and go back into my hole.
Let me take this one. Requirements for EVPN have been published as RFC 7209. Both EVPN and PBVPN are in last call. There are not going to be any changes to the specs. It's going through standard procedure. And procedure quite lengthy, but we are pretty much done. This is the standard. So probably for the first time in layer 2 domain, every vendor is going to support a technology in exactly the same way, which is great for our customers.
Well, yeah. That sounds a little bit wishful thinking, I guess, just being cynical about it. I mean, what vendors are going to show support for eVPN? I agree we got a standard. I'm not trying to be – I'm not trying to go all Greg on you now. I'm just who is interested in deploying eVPN at this point?
So if we look at shipping code, Cisco is shipping PBB version. Juniper in June 13.3 started to ship some limited version. Alcatel is doing EVPN in Nuage, meaning it's in Temetra OS.
Oh, yeah,
Ericsson is going to ship first implementation in 7 months. So,
is there interoperability testing going on with that?
Between Cisco and Juniper, I believe there was some. At ENTC in Europe, we plan interop testing for next year. So once a year in February, we usually do 2 weeks of interoperability testing, which then goes to Paris to MPLS/SDN/Ethernet/IPv6 Congress.
Yeah.
And this is where we are going to do first tests with regards to EVPN. It's already planned.
Okay. So this is the real deal then. There is a lot of momentum and vendor support behind this thing. And particularly if Cisco and Juniper and Alcatel, I mean, those are three huge names. If they put their weight behind it and we start traction,
hey.
That sounds
Hey, don't forget us.
Don't forget you, Ericsson guys.
Yeah. Stop that.
Sorry. I'm embarrassed now, both you guys from Ericsson. And, of course, Ericsson isn't as much in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, you've got to remember the Europeans do it better, after all.
For sure.
Yeah, but, well, I don't know. There's that whole broadband access thing you're going through there.
Yeah. No, it's just because of where I live. Copper's not good enough.
Which just happens to be Europe, right?
Yeah, my BGP is my copper line from here to the exchange.
That's right.
So if you go back to IETF, there are two additional drafts describing how to use EVPN for point-to-point services. There is a draft explaining how to use EVPN as glue between VXLAN or NVGRE domains. There is a draft describing how to use EVPN in combination with MLDP. So I'm co-author of all those documents. So I'm quite aware of what's going on there. And there is probably another 20 or 30 documents looking at the EVPN and NVO3 use case.
Is there one document, like often I go to a NANOG or a IETF and there's a presentation which is a really good summary of these protocols. Is there a link that you could give us that we could put in the show notes so people could find out more about EVPN?
Ourselves, myself and Russ, we are going to publish such document in some time. There are already reasonably good presentations done by Alcatel.
Mm-hmm.
I believe last one done at NANOG a week ago by Alcatel.
Right.
Quite good.
And in November, Jeff and I, I think we'll be doing, at least we've proposed it, a talk on EVPNs, maybe even two back-to-back on EVPNs at the Ericsson IP show. I don't even know what we're calling this thing, honestly, but Ericsson has an upcoming IP show in November, so we'll be talking about it there.
Very good. Well, that seems like a good place for us to wrap the show today. Thank you guys very much for coming on and talking about EVPN with us. And why don't we just go around the table real quick. And Jeff, I don't know if you're active in social media, you blog or anything like that, but if you do, would you share that with folks? And maybe there's a book you'd like to plug or anything like that. Go ahead.
I'm mostly active on Facebook, unfortunately.
Oh. Wow. Okay.
Oh,
that's too bad. I know. That's
too bad.
So you're dead to us. Okay, good to know.
I went on Facebook today and there was three columns. There was one column of people I've never spoken to or seen in my life and two columns of ads. I shut it down and it's the last I'll do for the next 3 months. Quite simply.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much for joining us. And you're on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook too, both of you, you can find Jeff there. What about you, Russ?
At Routing Geek on Twitter. I right at Packet Pushers and that other place that I'm not supposed to talk about. And
you're welcome. No, definitely, they're our friends. Network Computing is where you write, and they're actually very generous to the community, and they do support a lot of us.
And Greg and I both write at Network Computing as well. So
So I write at Network Computing, and I have one book published this last spring, which you should go buy. You should go buy it, even if you don't read it. I don't care. I'm trying to retire, so please. And you can find me on LinkedIn, of course. And I'm working on a new book in the area of network complexity. And if you happen to be in Greenland the week of the 22nd, I will be glad to have coffee with you or lunch or something.
I totally will not be in Greenland. Totally won't. Anyway. Russ is Routing Geek, RTGGEEK. That is how you spell his Twitter handle if you wish to follow him there. And what about you, Mr. Farrow?
I am going to be firmly ensconced at home for yet another week before I get on a plane, a big scary plane, and head off to San Francisco for GigaOM StructureConf and a bunch of meetings in and around the Bay Area where I'll be shaking down the various of the luminaries of the networking industry, otherwise known as engineers, who do the real work and no doubt will involve talking, chatting, and your drink. You can find me on my blog at etherealmind.com and also on the Twitter as @etherealmind. And please do go and follow up on saying hello to us on iTunes. And can I just plug one of my books, Ethan?
Please.
Yeah, well, if Ross plugged his, I want to plug mine. There's a book that is steadily reaching completion, which is called White Box Networking, which is my explanation of white box networking, and it's a lot of my thoughts. So if you think my opinions are crazy, wait until you read what I write. I haven't published a blog post or anything. A book is still in progress, but you can go along and get it for a 50% discount now before the book gets finished sometime in the next 3 months or so. And it talks all about how white box networks are, what the silicon is that's inside, and tries to unpack some of that so that people who aren't familiar with this idea of what's inside a switch or what a white box switch looks like, it helps to advise you on some ideas around why it works and why the industry has created white box. Not just about white box or the operating systems, but how and why this change is coming into the industry.
And I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. I am working on the planning of season one of a new podcast that I'll be launching with Mr. Chris Wall of wallnetwork.com, hoping to launch that around the time of VMworld in the US, late August, early September 2014. And that's just a teaser. I'm not going to tell you what it's about or anything else, but it's coming soon. We have outlines and schedules and plans and guests, and it's going to be a thing. It's really going to be a thing. And I got a whole bunch of ebooks that I've listed and got ideas for that I haven't written yet. And so there's nothing to plug, really. It's just one of those things when you get into this world, you have all these ideas of things, and then the time to write them seems to escape you. Know what I mean, Greg, with that open flow book of yours?
Yes, well, the open flow book it got out of control. I've learned to write shorter books.
Hmm. This, of course, has been the Packet Pushers podcast. You can follow the Packet Pushers on Twitter at Packet Pushers. Our hub of activity is packetpushers.net. If you would like to blog with Packet Pushers on our community blog, send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com, and we'd be happy to figure out who you are and sign you up so that you can write and contribute to the community. For any notes about this show, again, packetpushers.net, we will publish links to some presentations that were mentioned along the way here, so you can find out some more information about EVPN. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.